pocket.
What is that card going to be?
It is a red card. That can mean only one thing. It is time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast, the season 2 finale. With me tonight is...
John Brennig.
Well, season 2 came to a close, and we are here to talk about it. But we will never give up on our team, even though we've got some notes. We have some notes that we want to share with you. John, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Rolling along, man, into another week.
Yep. All right. So, it's hard to talk about. So, we fell again to Orlando, goalless, 1-0, at home, at Geodis Park. Gut check, what did you think of the match?
It is more frustrating than the last one because we gave up a dumb goal off a bad mistake.
Yeah.
And then had to fight back the whole way. It's one of those things that I just wonder what would have been different if we hadn't made that mistake. You know what I mean? What would it look like? But I mean, we still did not generate the most offense. You know what I mean? We was not a very productive thing. We looked kind of out of ideas, kind of generic. You know, some of the stuff we talked about at the end of the season, we looked like, hey, this is our one thing and we're just going to keep doing it, even though it's not really working very well, and keep plugging away and hope it does. Now, it's the playoffs, so it could have gone to penalties if it was tied 0-0. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was, but no one wants that. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it was frustrating, disappointing of just another, you know, decent defensive game, again, with one small mistake, and then just nothing on the offensive end. So gut reaction was mostly disappointment and some frustration.
Yeah, I'll back that along with the frustration of that they had such a long layoff to rest up, to gather themselves, and to really come up with some new ideas, and it didn't. And I'm going to put that on the coaches. That's 100% on Gary and his staff. There has to be some accountability. And as far as that goes, when you have that much time, benching certain players or playing certain players, sure, okay, that those are changes, but it didn't seem like there was anything on the field that mattered. Like, okay, so you take Jack Mayer out, put Lucas McNaughton in, okay, well, now what? Like, it didn't seem to matter. And that was what was the most frustrating thing. Now,
yeah. Yeah, and you say that because it was because Orlando came out with the exact same starting 11.
Yeah.
We changed three players. And so, yeah, I guess I don't know if you could say necessarily that was reaction two, you know what I mean? Because you released the lineups at the same time. But it's, I mean, essentially, they ran it back. So, you know, we tried to make some changes. So you would have hoped that there would have been an improvement and had a different result.
But, yeah. Yeah. And that, I'm trying to put a finer point on the key thing you said, which is it just seems like we were out of ideas. We didn't have really anything. We had new people on the field, but the same idea, right? And that's that has to come down to coaching, in my opinion. All right, John, hardest working player in the match for you?
I don't know. This one was hard because there were some players who were – there were. I will say this. There were some players who looked like they did not have quit in them. You know what I mean? There were some players who were out there still firing. Obviously, I will say, you know, interesting note, this game seemed a little chippier at the beginning. I know we got a couple cards for some stuff. You know, Godoy got one that was definitely just a hothead moment. So it was a little bit different feeling for this game in that respect. But I mean, honestly, to me, I sat there and kind of debated between, you know, is it Zimmerman, is it Lucas? Because I think they both kind of, you know, put in a great effort. But I'm just going to go with Zimmerman because, you know, he kind of leads by example back there and was, you know, putting in a shift. I mean, we had to defend. They definitely kept pressing forward and doing that. He went forward. He played his usual. He was his reliable self again. I don't think that you could blame him for that gaffe of a goal that was really on.
No, I do have I have someone I'm blaming, but it's not him.
Yeah. And he also, you know, was going forward in the box for the, you know, for the few set pieces we had, even though none of them resulted in anything. And so, I mean, I think he was all around. He was, you know, he was the captain for the game and he was, you know, doing what a captain does, trying to lead by example and working to make stuff happen and passing. But, you know,
Yeah, so
disappointing, but
I'm gonna give it to Lucas. Yeah, and if you think about it, I had Lucas, and I'm gonna just spoiler alert, Walker for my MVP. Same defensive pairing as last week. So it seems like again, true to our personality as a team, we are defensive first, and the no quit, hardest working players are the two center backs. That just isn't gonna cut it. That's just not cutting it. That's so. Yeah, Lucas for me. I thought his post game is what swayed me. I thought he.
Oh yeah, the little interview with Valera and the few others that.
Yeah, I think he really seemed genuinely disappointed, and that comes from the fact that he genuinely thought we had a chance to win it, and so yeah, that's
well,
that's,
and I think you get that perspective as someone who came to the team. I mean, he was traded here, so he comes here. Mm. You know, you come in not long before League's Cup. He gets some starting time. You see that. And, I mean, that's going to get you genuinely excited. If you came in from Toronto who, well, you know, they didn't end the season too well. And you come into a team that's winning and you do the League's Cup performance, you kind of have expectations, I think, like a lot of people. So I could see, I mean, I understand that perspective.
Yeah, and so my MVP, just, you know, to segue into it was Walker. You know, he did seem the brightest star on the field in the 70th minute. Like, he still was in it mentally, and he seemed to still have some gas in the tank. And I don't know where that comes from. I know he's probably, just like all athletes, he's naturally competitive, but also seems like he's also trying to make his case for the national team. He's also, you know, he's got there are other storylines behind
defensive
Walker.
Awards, best 11, et cetera, whatever.
He has put it on the table that he wants to play overseas. And so, you know, he truly seems to be like he's playing for something a little bit bigger. And that kind of comes through. What about you?
I'm actually going to give it to Shaq because there were a couple moments in the second half where he looked tenacious and determined to drive the ball forward. And fun fact, you know, you can measure individual players' performance, expected goals plus assists. He had the highest combined total of those. You know that? He was, in theory, statistically had the best or contributed the most as you were toward an expected goal that you would. Most of it was in the assist category, you know, because he doesn't take many shots on target. But you know, statistically he had a great game. And again, it just seemed like he had that fire, and he is absolutely reliable. I mean, if you watched, they did not have anything going down his side, really. I mean, obviously the guy who scored the goal technically lines up on that side, but again, that play was all kinds of, you know, an outtake. I mean, they had nothing on Shaq's side. You know what I mean? They kept going down, you know, our left side and kind of picking on Lovitz's side, 'cause they didn't see much with Shaq. So he's just a shutdown player. And I think it's also kind of I saw the tenacity, and it's also a cumulative thing of like, man, since we brought him in last year, like, he has just been a great piece. And it's funny. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about some futuristic things, but it's like, you know, whatever happens, like, man, our back line is great. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to say, we're fine. Our back line is fine. We can fix all the other problems and tweak all the other things, but we're good back there. He's great. He's young. You know what I mean? He's still young. Lovitz is not quite as stellar, but still good and reliable, if not a little bit older. And then the middle between Mayer, McNaughton, and Zimmerman, like, man, it's all lockdown stuff. And in that thing, it's a great piece to build from again, as we seem to kind of need to do that. But anyway, that's a long other stuff, but mine goes to Shaq.
Yeah, but you talk back three, back four, back five. In each of those configurations, I have supreme confidence in all the role players in that scenario. Right. Even if we just
even some of the backups, I mean, even Bauer, who's technically the fourth center back, and I think a little bit of, like, we have the depth there to be successful going forward. So it's like, that part's great. We just got to start solving this offensive question mark.
I know. And I was thinking about that while watching my other team, Nottingham, give up three goals. If they had, you know, if they had that kind of back line, it would just make makes a difference. And I want to kind of highlight Shaq as sort of my player of the year for me. I feel like he is one of the most well-rounded, just good soccer player. Like, when I think now of a good soccer player, you know, not, you can talk about talent or the greatest of all time or whatever, just like a good, solid, someone who really elevates the league, I think, the kind of talent that elevates the league, that's who I think of. And I've mentioned that before on the podcast, and I really do. Want to highlight Shaq's contribution this year. Without him, it's a totally different team. You know, we're in a different position.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember there was a point where we had one Eric Miller starting in that position? Like,
man.
We've come a long way. I mean, even Alistair was good. He wasn't quite as consistent as Shaq, but he was also younger.
He wasn't.
I know he's developed since he played here. But man, Shaq.
Alistair had the speed. You know, Alistair had the speed, and he had the connection with Liao. But you take Alistair just by himself without Liao, he struggled a bit.
He did, and his defensive level was not. I mean, Shaq can take a guy one on one and defend him, and it is really hard to dribble around him. Period. It just is.
Yeah, and at Celtic, you know, he has Aubameyang and some other guys that are like elite level talent in front of him. He needs that. He needs that. He needs that sort of midfield speed with him to match his talent level. But by himself now.
But we still love Alistair, and we'll always welcome him back anytime he visits, like he did randomly in the League Cup game or any other time.
Yeah, even if we have to corner him in the men's room, you know, this is still an incredibly dark moment in our podcast history. But yeah, that is always an open. Okay, John, let's take a break. We don't have goals to talk about. We don't want to get in trouble with any of the other players, the ex-players. So let's just take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about some uncomfortable season-ending questions that John and I have queued up. John is going to share some stats, what they are, and we will tell you finally on the final podcast of the year who or what needs to get off our pitch. Stay with us. We are back. All right, well, you're going to say goodbye to our friends Tempo Tex-Mex Tacos and look for a new sponsor next year, Chevron or any large oil conglomerate. I'm looking at you. John, let's ask some uncomfortable questions. I'm going to kick us off tonight because this one's been sort of eating at me. So post-game, Gary leads with the whole, I believe the season's caught up with us. Are you buying that? Are you buying it? Are you buying that?
No. If you talked about pre-League's Cup, we had the Open Cup games and our normal games. Yes, we had three-game weeks and stuff. I think after League's Cup, because they moved the New England game, we had what? We only had 1 week where we had a Wednesday-Saturday game where we had 2-7. Mm-hmm. I think we only had one of those scenarios. That's not a rest thing. Now, yes, there is a certain thing to say about mileage for the season, but other than our random lower body injury plague that just seems to crop up. I mean, we had enough starting players that we could do that. You know, you could choose between, you know, we had 2/3 of Sean, Godoy, or Dax in the midfield to play, and, you know, maybe in Ndongo if we're winning. You know what I mean? We had, like we talk about, you know, center back depth. We had Lucas or Mayer or Zimmerman available, you know, with Bauer in back. If we had some combination of that available, we had some kind of, you know, like we had enough depth. We were not like, oh my gosh, we need to start Hockenson and Taylor Washington because we're just short on people and they've been on, you know, game of rest. Like this wasn't a, yes, you get tired as the season goes on per se, but it was not a short rest timing situation. So I feel like that's a bit of a cop out. Mm. Now, if you're talking about, if he's alluding to the fact that, hey, there's a lot of gameplay or game footage out on us this year and teams have kind of figured us out. Yes, that bit is absolutely true. Yeah. But that's not an excuse. That's an impetus for you to go and figure out new things to do, to draw up set plays off of corners or off of free kicks and stuff to make magic happen, to do, you know, diversions, to pull people, you know what I mean? Basically, the way I think of it is, you know, like the really great college basketball coaches are not just about substitutions. They're the guy who are like, all right, we're down three. We have to go in with one play. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, drop some screens, do this to get this guy open because this is the guy we want the shot. Here's how we're going to get him the ball. And we're going to do that. Obviously soccer is not quite as drawn up, but on corners, you can do some of those things. And we saw they did some creative stuff. I think last year we had some stuff. I feel like we just kind of went with the whip it in there and hope it works. You know what I mean? Like I just never felt like there was extra creativity. So I call BS on the, we've played a lot of games. Yes, but we had plenty of rest and we had enough players available. And if you're saying it's because people knew about us or caught up with us or the, you know, players were not very creative, well, that's on you to solve, I feel like. So that's more of a self-indictment than anything. So I don't know. How did you take
that? Yeah, I think he was totally just talking about the Leagues Cup finally caught up with. And I think he alluded to it in the follow-up after he, you know, sort of made that statement. And I don't buy it. I feel like you look at the European leagues, you look at the Mexican leagues, you look at the Central American leagues. South American leagues, they play a lot of games too. I just don't buy it, really. Yeah. I just don't.
No, I agree. And if you're saying there was a mental hangover, great. You get 1 or 2 weeks for that. You don't get, what if we play 7, 8, 9?
Yeah, these are
games,
professional.
9 or 10 games?
Yeah, it's supposed to be professional. These are professional soccer players. So yeah, if it's a mental thing.
If you do, you get in like a freaking spiritual healer and burn some clary sage and do some shit in the, some stuff in the locker room and, you know, clear out the spirits or whatever. Like, I don't know.
I was warned.
Those places.
Yeah. So you have Matthew McConaughey come in and give you a pep talk, right? Yeah.
Get in there with some all right. You go out to the sweat huts with Aaron Rodgers and maybe don't smoke the ayahuasca, but you know, you go out there and have a spiritual moment or two. Do the bonding. I don't know, man.
Point of var, I'm going to var you. You actually drink the ayahuasca. You don't smoke it. But anyway.
Okay. As you can tell, I have
experience. I don't know. I know things. All right. I drink and I know things. All right, John. Uncomfortable question. What do you got?
So, in looking at the league around us and some of these successful teams, Almada obviously has had a great season. Some of these other teams I'm looking at, you know, Dallas made the playoffs, Orlando, Miami did not make the playoffs, but obviously we know they're a good team and they're going to be a true threat next year when they actually have like a team for a year. Both LA teams, I see them building a lot with their youngest players, high flying people. So I'm not talking about Messi. I'm talking about the Gregor or whatever, and the people they brought in, Almada, all these players, all South or Central American talent that they're bringing in. We have not had a great history with that. You know what I mean? We have Leal, we have Godoy, but he was an MLS journeyman beforehand. Really, our two experiments were Loba, which there's probably
Yonder,
a few things.
Yonder Cadiz and Loba, yeah.
Yeah, Yonder. So I just wonder, is Gary and our organization just not set up to really utilize South American talent, whether it be a language barrier, whether it be a stylistic barrier with his defense first football and tracking back? Because what I'm saying is I'm looking around and I'm seeing the good young talent like Velasco in Dallas, to throw another name out there. The good young talent is coming from South America and shining in MLS. If it's European talent that's coming over, they're a little bit older, like Sam. You know what I mean? Obviously,
Sam is young.
Well, Sam is still young. Yeah, but I'm saying like Sam and Hani are kind of rare cases, and they're also very much more expensive in their DP slots. You know what I mean? I don't see a lot of young, promising, bright 22-year-old midfielders coming over from England. They're coming from south of us. Do we have a significant problem there, and how do we fix that? Or is it going to hurt us going forward because we can't recruit like that? At least from what I've seen, we don't have a track record of it.
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure if it's an uncomfortable question because it's a sort of a nuanced question because it's a both a yes and a no. Yes, Gary is a Europe, you know, he's a Staffordshire guy. He's, you know, he's going to coach Midlands, North London style, you know, classic 1970s Arsenal defense first. You know, that's the guy. That's Gary. Like, that's who he was. To his credit, he has changed over the years, but that doesn't change who he is at core. He is a European soccer coach. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, I feel like the failures with, I think our failures with our Central American players that we've struggled with, and I think he also struggles sometimes to get through to Godoy and to Leal because he's just such a different type of coach than those coaches that you mentioned from Dallas, especially. I don't know. I feel like he is who he is. We got him for a reason, and I think that it's going to be a harder road because I agree on the other side of the coin that the best young talent, and I, you know, this was sort of my rant mid-season about getting a young midfielder, a good young midfielder from Central America, go into the Costa Rican leagues or, you know, go into Brazil or go into Argentina, like get us a South American or Central American good midfield player because you need that sort of linchpin style. But on the other hand, I hate to be both sides or kind of this thing, but you know, we showed that our style is such a bothersome against these Mexican, like you know, the classic Mexican style attack first. We really handed it. We really frustrated them. We really did. We got under Club America's skin so badly because we wouldn't rise to their bait. Like they would try to bait.
Yeah.
We wouldn't rise to the bait. And stylistically speaking.
Yeah.
And we beat them. And it still sticks in. You know, it still sticks. You know, it really bothers them. And you know, Toluca really shows how that aggressive style just doesn't work against Derry. So, yes and no, but to win an MLS, you have to be more creative because MLS definitely seems like a mishmash of styles, right? It seems like a real cluster of styles, and you just don't. We haven't really, as a league, we have never ever really settled on a style, on a real, like, this is MLS soccer. You can't say that. There is no such thing.
I know what you mean. Like, I think of the Bundesliga has a style versus the Eredivisie versus EPL. Those are all three different, and Serie A. And obviously, in La Liga, they're all slightly different styles, and I know what you mean. It's pretty pervasive, and you have some standouts like Atletico, who plays slightly different than everyone else in La Liga, and because of it, they give some teams uber trouble and have squeaked away some championships.
We may be losing.
You're right. I feel like there is no like this is MLS style.
Let me use a better example that's domestic. Georgia Tech's triple option in the college field, like it frustrates. You never want to play them. Because you could be a 5-0 Alabama team. You see Georgia Tech on the air, like, oh my god, we have to plan for the stupid option. We haven't run the option since high school, like, you know what I mean? And then they end up scoring 27 points on you. It's a frustrating style, but you know, it doesn't make for great soccer to watch, honestly. No. Like, we've talked about this for years though.
Yeah, well, and that was my thing, is getting to it, like, I think that it isn't. I think there's a disconnect between Gary and I think his style and the way we work hampers us getting South American talent. I think it does.
It does.
I don't think it eliminates it. I don't think it makes it impossible, but I think it hampers it. But to me, I guess the underlying point is I feel like I see a lot of the success with younger players, which is kind of a money ball strategy to get younger players, try them out, give them that. And the league obviously tries to kind of push that with the U22, slots.
Yeah.
I feel like it gives you an opportunity to do that. And we are not really able to leverage that. So I feel like it does limit it in some ways. So we're left with free agents, the draft, gam hoarding and magical trades. And I'm not saying that we can't succeed that way, but in looking at some of these other teams, I'm like, man, it just feels like we have an untapped potential for talent and it just doesn't work. And, maybe we can pull it together next year, but I don't know. I just feel like, especially at midfield and creative midfield areas, you're going to be hard pressed to find a MLS journeyman or an MLS veteran or someone, from Europe who's cheap enough and, that would play in Gary's system kind of, or has played in a system like that, that would be able to come in and actually really affect change and be useful, if that makes sense. So
it does.
I agree. It wasn't the most uncomfortable question, but it's one of the ones I've been pondering of, like, now that this season is wrapped and we saw that creativity is an issue, especially in the midfield is an issue, how do we solve it? And I was looking around the league to do all that. And I'm like, man, it seems like this is the easy mechanism that other people are leveraging. And I don't think we have that I don't think that's available to us.
Yeah. The player that I think of, and I think of how DC United built their system. They built it through young Central American talent. And one of the things I think Paul Arriola talks about when he was in the academy out west is that the fact that he spoke Spanish made him such a better teammate and helped him rise so quickly through the U20 system. I think there's a lot. This could be its own podcast. This is a very it's a complicated subject.
I agree.
It's a complicated
subject.
That's
why I said this is a whopper of a question, just because it's so big.
I'm not sure if it's uncomfortable, but it's very complicated. It's a very complicated question. And only because MLS has not yet settled on a feeder system. They haven't. They're just basically seeing what works, but they don't have it. We don't have a true pipeline of talent yet. I feel like they want to get there though.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know, I will say at least next week, you know, next year we'll have young Adam Sipic as our first academy to homegrown pipeline, you know, coming forward. So at least we're building up that, which again, I think will only help Nashville to have another way to get talent that's essentially kind of under club control and easy for us to sign, as opposed to going out and having to find these, you know, do a lot of that scouting. Yeah. So,
all right. Yeah. All right, John, hit us with some stats.
Well, I will serve to remind, I think the key stat of the year is that 13-0-0 in scoring two or more goals. I think that's the key. Like, to me, we let in 32 goals, which is 0.9 something, you know, over the year. So we let in less than a goal a game. Great. That is the defense that we've seen and we've expected. Yeah. But to me, I think that stands out is, sure, we were defensive, but if we wanted to win, which is really the way to secure points, get home field, and to do that, we got to have more offense. You know what I mean? Scoring wasn't goals enough, which also is interesting to me because it kind of speaks to, I haven't looked back, but how, because I know we had a couple of, you know, 1-1 games. Was it giving up late goals? Was it coming back and stealing them? Like, how did we end up? Because we used to eke out a lot of 1-0 wins. I mean, you remember like 2021. That was just our thing.
It was always late goals.
If we won, it was like 1-0, you know, and then the occasional like 4-goal outburst against Chicago because someone gets a hat trick, you know, that guy. Mm. You know, one of those things happen. But I feel like it's just interesting to me that it seemed like we couldn't lock down some of those low scoring wins. And I haven't looked back enough, but I'd be curious to see how many of them was it we gave up something and came back, or was it, you know, we let one in and had to claw our way back, and then we just didn't score enough to actually secure the win, which again would have been, you know, 2-1. So
yeah.
I don't know. Otherwise, in particular to this game, I think I would tell you this, we outpassed them. We had more completed passes, which was nice, but 10 total shots on target, not great. 10 total shots, 4 on target. And again, that big chances I brought up last time of things that you would expect most people to score is a big fat zero. Our expected goals was 0.37. It was, I believe they said it was actually one of the lowest ones we've had all year at home. And so it's just like, if we're not going to generate offense, we're not going to win the games. You know what I mean? We would have had to stifle it to a 0-0 and go up to the coin toss. It's penalty kicks. And like, that's just not a way to advance in the playoffs. It's really not. I mean, maybe you get one or two games. Maybe we could have gotten past this round with that, but you're not going to win, let's see, 2, 3, 4, you know, 5, 6 games in the playoffs. You're just not.
All right. Well, John, I think it's time to give the people what they want. And what I want to hear is who or what needs to get off your pitch.
Mm. So even though we have talked about some of the limitations of Gary thing, I'm going to go back to, I mean, as the game wound down, you know, I was watching a lot of the social commentary and the commentaries on the socials, not social commentary. We weren't talking about political stuff. Sorry. But, you know, and you saw the frustration, you think, and then inevitably that little hashtag Gary out started popping up. And I'm like, so here's my thing. Again, we talked about this team's strength right now. You and I mentioned it earlier. Our back line is great. Gary is the man to take advantage of that and make sure that back line locks us down. And again, we tied with Seattle, by the way, for the lowest goals allowed. Less than a goal a game. Outstanding. That's what we want to do. You can bring in other coaches and we have the talent, but you know, you're probably still good. You're going to start letting in more goals. That's Gary's key. We have to fix the offense. This team is built for it. If you bring in someone else, it's going to take retooling. And, you know, there's a lot of work with that. I don't think it's the time for that, especially given the age of some of our talent. You know what I mean? We have some people critical decision. Like, it's just, it's not for that. The other thing to mention is the timing. Do you know, Eric, 11 teams this year have fired their coach in MLS. There's only 29 teams in the league. Literally a third of the league fired their coach this year. If anything, and like, you know, not thinking about us, but thinking about the league. So sure, there are a lot of coaches out there that got jobs, but a lot of them screwed things up and you don't really want to hire them. Or Bruce Arena, who didn't screw the job up, but may have done stuff that might have, you know, blackballed him for a while. So who knows? And I don't know if you want to touch that, you know, try to open Pandora's box there. So, you know, if you look at, there's a bunch of other teams hunting for head coaches. If anything, it's not the time to get out there and get in a coach hunt, because we're going to be fighting with a bunch of other teams, and some of them might be more promising things. Some of them might be more promising destinations or have more promising young talent. So if anything, this is not the time to do it, because everybody else is doing the same thing. And this is not one of those cases where you want to follow the trend of, yeah, let's just have everyone in the league overturn their coaches. That's not what you want to be doing. So I wanted to throw that out there, because that was a really interesting stat that I found, that literally a third of the league has fired and replaced their coaches this year. And it's just not time for the Gary out thing. I get it. To me, I think we give it one more year and we see where we are. We got to do some changes. We got to see what the front office is. But honestly, as much as this is on Gary, I also think there's a fair amount of responsibility on the front office too, with some of these signings and some of the lack of movement too. So realistically, you can heap blame on Gary. There is some that belongs there. There's some that belongs other places, and it just doesn't add up to the Gary out thing. Like, it's just, it's not time to blow it up yet. So,
red card for, so it's get off my pitch for just the concept of the Gary out the coach. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just,
John, mine's more technical. You know, we both work in internet technology or information technology or IT as it's known. And I was looking forward Saturday to watching my beloved Lipscomb Bisons take on Bellarmine up in the ASUN Championship. I was going to tune into ESPN Plus, which I pay for, by the way. That they are not a sponsor of this podcast, and they never will be. So I tune in, and there's no audio. I'm like, oh, there's something wrong. I've got something. No, the audio's right. There's no. And slowly, as the entire first half goes through, the focus on the camera gets worse and worse and worse and worse.
So it's not the quality of the camera. It's like actual focus.
Yeah. It just blurs out. I've worked cameras on shoots before. It's like someone was just hitting the focus. They were like, had their arm over this focus pull, and it was just slowly pulling the frame back further and further and further, the plane of focus. Kept hearing like audio problems, like so, and these kids kept running in front of the camera and like knocking it, and it would like jiggle ever so often. And so my red card is for Lipscomb University and or ESPN for missing the entire first half of the match with no audio, no video, no commentary, no scoreboard, nothing. You couldn't see it. You couldn't hear it. The last few minutes of the first half, they finally fixed it to where you could just see them in the half. Yeah. It was a good match. It was a very college soccer. I finally decided it's kind of like, it very much looks like the League's Cup kind of. It's just no holds barred. It's almost like professional wrestling out there. It is really, there's no plan. There is no plan. I don't know if they draw up plays, but it looks like it's just, who's got the best talent? Let's see what happens. It looks like, you know, backyard soccer. And if you've seen Lipscomb's field, it almost is my backyard. Yeah. So, so that's my red card. But I do want to shout out to my Lipscomb Bisons. Three times in a row, three-peat. This is their third in a row ASUN championship beating Bellarmine 1-0. Bellarmine is Bellarmine is an interesting. So they're a small college in Louisville. Did not know that. They seem to be a Catholic school. They were promoted from division, from out of division up to the ASUN. They actually earned their way in through
relegation in college soccer.
Yeah, I did. I learned a lot when the broadcast was actually going. I learned quite a bit. They actually got promoted into the ASUN. They were invited into the ASUN just for soccer, and this is their only sport. Is just soccer. I think they have a basketball team, but I got to research that, maybe borrow that. But I don't know. I was just, they played really, really well. And this had one of the most, speaking of red cards, Lipscomb's senior goalkeeper was on a red card suspension. So a freshman was in goal. He is 5'10". he is 18 years old. He is from Mexico City. And he has a bit of a temper, so I was waiting for him to get a red card because he was jawing quite a bit in Spanish and in English with some of his opponents. And at one point, he miscleared the ball off the back of someone. It jumped up, and so he was outside the goalie area. So he jumped up and knocked the ball down out of the guy, so he couldn't chip it in. He was outside the goal. He got a red card.
Right. Yeah.
So they had to go to another freshman who has never played a game of soccer in the collegiate level ever, and he makes three saves in a row on corners. Nice. It was a crazy game. A lot of back and forth. That's, very exciting game.
That's the football script stuff you love. That's the chaos and fun. I like
it. It was you love chaos. I know you love chaos. You would have enjoyed this match. Also, shout out to the Lipscomb supporters for getting away with chants that I could not get away with at basketball games at Lipscomb. So shout out to them. You know, being a Christian school, they got away with some interesting language. I'm not sure how they snuck it in, but also it kind of reminded me of old days back at Vanderbilt with the PDL. So it was just, you know, small. It was a small crowd, a lot of engagement. Everyone was packed in shoulder to shoulder. Lipscomb won. They go on to the NCAA tournament. They've already beat Louisville at that Division I level. So hopefully we will see some results in the tournament. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to stop talking about Lipscomb. We're going to talk about our end of the year wrap up. We'll tell you what we think is going to happen next year. And then we'll tell you what we got wrong. We are back. All right, John, I had a note here to do the Metro Minute. Lipscomb three-peat. Unfortunately, the Vanderbilt women's kind of really struggled through SEC play and did not rank this year. A lot of freshmen, a lot of young talent. They only had one senior returning, so turnover is key, it seems like. But I also want to say Tyrese Spicer, Alonso Alafeti, three of the others all made All-Americans. Tyrese is going into the draft. I did confirm. And Tyrese is one of those examples of a Caribbean League guy who Lipscomb took a chance on. He has got the scoring record and assist record in the A-Sun Championship. He is an All-American. And, you know, I'm just saying, Gary, you may want to take a look at him. Just, you know, just take a peek. He's a good midfielder. And, you know, we could use somebody back there. I don't know. Just I'm throwing that out there. I'm throwing that out there to the universe. All right, John. All right. So let's think about the season in retrospective. Where did we think we were going to end up? Do you think we ended up? Because I think I predicted sixth place.
I predicted fourth or fifth. So I was very wrong. Though, to be fair, pre-League's Cup we were second. So we were on pace for great things.
Yeah, we were.
But actually, it was the week before.
We had started struggling quite a bit, though. So,
Yeah. No, I'm just saying. Yeah. So you were closer to right, but neither of us was right, and honestly, neither of us thought we'd be quite that low. So,
well, we weren't Bradley Wright Phillips, where we were end up like what did he say 12th or something like I've never.
Oh yeah, he had us going well out of the playoff or something like.
I'm not going to ever forgive him that for that. All right.
No, but then don't worry because. Like, if you remember the year Austin came in, and I think they won the Western Conference, you know what I mean? And they kept the receipts of everyone predicting them being last. All the St. Louis fans did that. And then they still crashed out in the first round of the playoffs. And so that was just funny. You know what I mean? You got a little irony.
Well, when you meet, you go up against the Scottish god that is Johnny Russell. I don't know.
And again, admittedly, it's just that being there. You've never been in the playoffs. It's the first time things. Yeah. It's kind of a shock.
Hey, I said this last year about Charlotte. Shout out to the folks in St. Louis. It's a great town. I love going to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I hope they become
glad they're in the league. I think they have they have been a benefit to the league. Their improvement. It was a great place to choose expansion. I know San Diego's up next, but like I know people are talking about like we're after that, like Vegas or whatever. I'm like, I don't know about Vegas.
Another Vegas.
Look again, Vegas will make money and pack seats, but to me, St. Louis had the passion. Like I think that was the best choice that we could have made to bring in at this time. I think it was perfect.
That should have been earlier. St. Louis is a soccer city. Yeah, some of the best men's national team players have come from St. Louis. It has always been a haven for sports in general. And so I love St. Louis, think it's a great town, and look forward to seeing what they do next year. All right, John. Yeah. All right. So we're thinking about lineups. who do we have coming back this year that we need to make a decision on? I don't want to go through an exhaustive list of like contracts and stuff, but let's just give us a few names and let's talk about what we should do going forward.
Yeah. I think the biggest, so some of the biggest examples, Fafa Picot is a free agent. So he's a big one because he's got nothing tying him to the club. So he's the biggest one. All of our DPs are locked down. So in other words, Sam, Hani, Walker, they're here. Right. You know what I mean? The other thing that we do know is, again, Sipic has been signed, which almost certainly, because you have two homegrown slots, almost certainly means that Zubac is out because they're both strikers in homegrown slots. And Zubac, I mean, I don't think he even made a lineup the last month and a half of the year. So, yeah. So I think that one's, to me, that one's kind of a self-explanatory of we're going to see Zubac replaced by Sipic, that we just are. Like, I think that's what's going to happen. But yeah, so Bunbury is out on option. So is Bauer. Anungwa is, which is kind of an interesting one. We'll see about that. Otherwise, a lot of the other guys, I think the other big one is our boy Lucas McNaughton. He is technically on option as well, though. So is, you know, the guy he came into place, Nick Dupuy, who never played a minute of soccer. So I don't know why we wouldn't keep Lucas over him, because we've seen what Lucas has, and he's great. And he's great at that price. So
yeah. So let's start with the last first. I think we keep Lucas for sure. That's not a hard.
Yeah, decision. Teal is up in the air to me. I mean, we might keep him if he's cheap enough, because I don't know if you're going to find someone else. It's like it's that experienced replacement striker. Like, are you going to find someone else that knows the system and stuff for that much, for that cheap? I don't know. I mean, there's a reason we moved on from CJ. He was more expensive, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest one, the biggest question is our resident ginger, Dax McCarty. He is supposedly in contract negotiations because his contract was up again. He talked about retirement. I think to me, that's the biggest one, because if you had asked me at the end of Leagues Cup, I'm like, he's got some left in the tank. Let's go. You know what I mean? Even post Leagues Cup, he has had some good performances and his passing has been key. I think he could contribute again next year personally, but I think it would have to be on a much more limited time basis. Like, he can't start every game. He could start every other game. He could be a great super sub. I think it's at the point where he literally has to have minutes managed if he's coming back, but I know why they might ask him back. He's got the leadership. So to me, that's probably the biggest question mark, because there's so many variables as to what he may want to do. Who knows? Maybe he had a contract offer from Apple to come be a commentator and he's dangling that out there and contemplate. Like, I don't know. Depending on what he's got on his table, he's got a lot of options in front of him.
To have him and Tony Husband together, not, no offense to Jamie, but him and anyone, he would be great. He would be a great color guy for any broadcast, anytime. He's got a big personality. He's got a lot of soccer knowledge. He's perfect. He's perfect for that role. I don't think he should come back. I think he should retire, especially given his performance at the end here. I hate to spoil the whole season for that, but I mean, it's just he and Fafa Picot both are players that I think are just brilliant in stretches. And if you manage their hour, you know, if you manage their minutes, sure. Yeah. But you can't manage the minutes of guys like that. They're too big. They're too big. Their personalities are too big. You're going to run afoul of their personality at some point. I don't know that I would want that job for either of those guys. So I think Fafa and Dax both, we need to move on from them.
I think it depends on what his price tag is, because technically he's a free agent, so he can go out and bid and get, you know what I mean? If he gets bites from other places, I wouldn't be surprised if they want to pay him more and he goes. If he doesn't get bites, we might be able to keep him on the cheap. So, you know what I mean? The other, I think, interesting one is Joe's under contract. We've got another year, I think, of Joe. Mr. Panico he may have an option, but technically he's under club control, meaning we control his ability to negotiate anything. So basically he's here for another year, unless we want to trade him. So that one's an interesting one, because we talked about, you know, where do we go with the goalie of the future? I think you even mentioned, like, look, he's going to want to go somewhere. It's probably time for him to do that. Technically he could, but he would have to work with the club to make that move. So I will say this, we may not have to make a goalkeeping decision until next year, just because of the timing of the contract. And by the way, I am stealing a bunch of this information from the great Chris Ivey on Broadway Sports.
Yeah, Broadway Sports. Yep.
And analyzed all of these. You should read it. I don't agree with some of his conclusions.
No.
He even used the words possibly shopping Jacob Schaufelberg around for Gam, and I about foot in the desk because I hard disagree that that shouldn't even be allowed. However, he has some reasonable explanations for a lot of these.
I think
so.
Chris,
I would go read his article again on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. Read it, understand it, because again, this is part of the reason with my Gary Out rant. Yes, we want to blow up the midfield. Well, great. Here's the thing. Muil and Leal are under contract. We would have to trade them. That's not exactly easy. Anungwa's not. Okay, maybe we don't have positions. But again, there are contractual and money obligations that make this harder than just you underperformed, get out of town. Unfortunately,
Chris's proximity to Knoxville, I think, has sometimes touches his brain a little in a bad way. So I give him that pass. But yeah, right. I don't agree with that conclusion at all.
But again, I think there's some big moves. To me, the Dax one is the biggest one because I think if he asks back just like last year, and he's willing to maybe take less money and play less minutes, we might keep him around. I don't know if that's actually the best thing. You know what I mean? But I mean, if we don't have anyone else to put him there, who knows? So, yeah. And then a few of the others. I think Fofo would be an interesting one to watch. I wouldn't be surprised if he finds another home where he gets paid just a little bit more and maybe some guaranteed minutes. Because, again, you saw he and Jacob never really saw the field at the same time. So, clearly, Gary doesn't see that as a compatible option. And I could see him wanting to start. And, I mean, there are other clubs, I don't know, Colorado maybe, that could use him. So, I wouldn't be surprised.
Vancouver, Colorado. There's a lot of teams out west that could use
All those Western teams that no one really cares about. Or watches because their games are on.
No, I mean they literally have a problem that those left side attackers just don't. They try to pull up midfields and yeah. So, all right, John, what did we get wrong?
I did not have any notes from last time.
Other than the score,
the double episode, but I didn't listen to the first last one because that was confusing and I confused myself just now talking about it. Honestly.
All right, John, let's say goodbye to this season. Let's say goodbye to our wonderful listeners. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, go ahead, John.
Before we do, just remember, next year, CONCACAF Champions Cup, not CONCACAF Champions League, the Triple C is upon us. The first week of games is February 6th. That is 86 days from now. Now, most of the MLS calendar happens before December, like the free agency, the declaring, the finishing contracts, the super draft, all that stuff. The free agency period doesn't end until like sometime January, February-ish. But I'm just saying, unlike last year, we can't be dangling business. We got to get stuff signed up because we have to have a roster of people practice and ready to reach the field early in February. So it's going to be, I mean, February to, again, November, if we make it this far, we're going to have 10 months of soccer next year, Eric. Busy. So prepare yourself for lots of soccer to look forward to, and hopefully we have a roster deep enough to field all these things and maybe shake things up and make some results in some of these competitions. I don't know. With that, I will let you conclude.
Yes, thank you, John. Thank you for at home for listening. Thank you abroad for tuning in and downloading, and for please reach at us on Twitter. John, go ahead and give them your handle as well, the at get off my pitch.
Yeah, so at @GOMP_pod. And if you want to follow me, it's at loserfroggy, F-R-O-G-G-I-E. I mean, if you want to throw that out there. But, you know, I tweet some personal things, but it's a lot very soccer-focused as well. But we also have, again, if you want to talk to the podcast, give us feedback, get off my pitch, @GOMP_pod on there. And then on the YouTube,
get off my pitch. I also run a channel for the HEMA Club here, the historical – we've rebranded. So it is the Nashville School of Historical Fencing. So I also run that as well as participate in tournaments. So check us out on the socials. Thank you again, John. Great year. Have a good night.
See ya.